Happy opening day, everybody.
Molly and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score.
Who was that?
You know, that was David Ross.
Oh, yeah, Rossi.
It's kind of mean, really.
A little bit.
Is that from last year? Or is that he just called in to say that?
What is he doing this opening day? He's not doing TV, right?
I don't know. I feel bad for him to a certain extent, but I also think that they probably, you know, I don't know. If they made the playoffs last year, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
We would not be having this conversation. I fully believe that.
I agree.
Cubs missed the playoffs. They had a big lead at the beginning of September. They blew it down the stretch, and they felt compelled to make a change. If they make the playoffs, I don't think they feel that kind of urgency.
I don't know how to feel.
It's a hypothetical. It's impossible
to
prove or disprove.
You know, I think he's a good guy.
We can't prove that. Can we agree that
David
they're in a
Ross.
Better spot now?
Yes, but I don't want to say it because I like David Ross.
I do too. But
no, but you're like you're the only guy that was like, yes, get rid of Grandpa Rossi.
I was not like that.
I was here. Brandon, you remember him marching around the studio. What the hell happened? When did you become a one-man band?
David, you know how to play the trumpet?
Where did he get that
drum? Not play the trumpet. I was not celebrating the demise of another man or manager. I think the Craig Council was worth firing David Ross for. But I don't think that they would have done it if they would have made the playoffs. That's as far
That's
as I will go.
Fair.
And I respect the job that he did.
You put a moratorium on bad-mouthing Ross,
I did.
Too.
I did.
I know.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's weird that you'd throw a party and then kick everyone out
Wrong
of it.
Show. No parties.
Oh.
No parties in studio. Wrong show.
You shot off that confetti cannon.
No, it was
I saw
not.
The pieces
no confetti
everywhere.
Cannon. I wasn't wearing the Craig Council Brewers jersey or the new Cub uniform. Nothing like that.
No, it's good stuff.
They're in better shape now, and they begin this season. First time in probably 5 years that the Cubs have opened the season. I got to go back and look at 2019, but that feels right. That they've started the season as a favorite in the division. They think that, and they should feel like they can win. And they can win the NL Central. NL West loaded. NL Central winnable. Don't worry about the East. The Braves and the Phillies are going to duke that out, but in the Central they can win.
What's the toughest division? It might be the AL East.
I think you can make that argument. Orioles.
I think I almost just did.
Yankees. Blue Jays, Red Sox. Red Sox, I don't know. I don't know, Mo. I think I'm going NL West. I'm going NL West with the Giants, who had a really good offseason. You talk about it, a franchise.
Padres got a Cy Young winner.
Padres go out and they get
Cy Young winner.
Dylan Cease, you predicting he's going to win the Cy Young?
Did I say that?
Is your name Bruce?
I did say that.
Bruce did that.
Why wouldn't he win the Cy Young? He's out of here now. That's Padres, what happens. Guys leave here and win the Cy Young.
We can agree.
It's a fair question, Mike.
Thanks, Bruce. Padres are good. Giants are improved. Then there's the Diamondbacks, who are pennant winners. And then the Dodgers are the Dodgers. Molly, I think the NL West is the best division in baseball.
Yeah, you can
take your Orioles.
I wouldn't wager on it.
Why not?
I was just making a reference to Shohei Ohtani's translator.
You think it's going to affect his performance?
I couldn't remember the guy's name.
You think he's going to be affected by this?
I hope so.
You hope that Ohtani is distracted?
Yeah. Don't you? Honestly, do you want the richest team to win? Who are you?
No, but I'm not picking.
You know what would be nice if there was like some team in, say, like a medium to large city that had two teams and the second team somehow managed to win? Wouldn't that be different? Wouldn't that be kind of a fun thing that happened out of nowhere?
The Angels.
Where it turned out that the guy that Brandon thought was the third in the bottom three.
Oh, you're talking about the White Sox.
No, I'm not. You've got the Angels.
Ask me after the parade.
Thank you.
Angels are not going to be better than the Dodgers. Sox are not going to be better than the Cubs. And the Mets won't be better than the Yankees. So in the three cities that have two franchises, I think that there's a clear
definition
of which is the better team.
Would you agree that in this city it is the most pronounced?
That's a good question. But, yeah, I agree with that because the gap between the Cubs and the Sox is greater than the gap between those two other teams or two other cities. Maybe, I would say so. The Angels still have Mike Trout. The Sox have Luis Robert Jr., who you said was better than Mike Trout. That we don't need to gloss over that one either. That needs to be something that comes back.
No, I didn't say better than him.
You said greater than.
Listen. Listening's a skill. I said he would start the All-Star game over him because probably Trout gets hurt. But I didn't clarify why.
I think you clarified Luis Robert Jr. greater than Mike Trout.
Greater than.
Greater than.
This will have a better season than Mike Trout. Let's go. Tell Dustin. You know, all you got to do is schedule Trout to play in Chicago, and he won't turn up.
That's what Dustin says. Yeah. That's the Dustin theory.
That's him.
So let's revisit our predictions for people that might not have been listening to the pick six or extra point. Because we said that the Sox, I said 68 victories, which I think is high. I agree that it is a little bit optimistic, but it is opening day. I said 68 victories for the Sox, 88 for the Cubs. Cubs win the division. I don't know what that puts the Sox probably in the cellar of the AL Central, which could be the worst division in baseball.
I had the Sox winning 65 games. They were not going to lose 100 2 years running. And I had the Cubs at 87-45. So that's enough to win the division, and they would be ahead of your beloved Milwaukee Brewers.
You essentially stole Brandon's predictions, right?
Well, no, there was a lot of controversy about who cheated on whom. A
little controversy.
Oddly enough, and honestly, I mean, when I came in this morning, Brandon was sitting there. I waved to Alex and Brandon as I'm wont to do. He never even looked up. I had to like walk over and like wave at him. So technically, could I have looked in and seen his sheet?
Possibly.
I suppose, but I didn't. Listen. I did. You can ask Alex. You saw me. All I did was like make a face and wave.
Yeah, Brandon was locked in this morning.
That's right.
Dustin's not here.
But was he looking at – did he
was probably,
get your predictions and was jotting them down real quick?
I was holding the sheet that said on it 65-87.
Yeah, no, Dustin's not here. There will be no outlandish conspiracy theories.
Okay, I'm sorry. No, but it's weird that we both came up with the same numbers for both teams. It was very odd.
I think that if
I said 65 first, and he waved it, and then he went ahead of me on the 87, and I was – as you were talking, I was raising my sheet up to you.
If the Cubs win 87 or 88 games, if they win in the high 80s, it's going to be a fun summer. It's going to be a fun season. That's the sense as we get here hours before opening day starts. This is going to be
a fun year to be a Cub fan. So I'm trying to – I kind of went into the idea of this exercise thinking, what are they predicted to win 84.5? And I thought, what wins the division? And I thought, well, Milwaukee had like 90 wins last year, something like that.
They got hot late. Me.
And I thought, well,
Craigtober.
You know, that's what the Cubs have to do. So I gave them 87.
They got ready for Craigtober or Craigtember. Which is it? Last year it was pretty.
It's Craigtember, isn't it?
Okay. Well,
is it Craigtober?
It's both this year.
Yeah.
It's both.
Do you remember the very first night of Craigtember?
It's Craigtember.
I think it's Craig Pro starting. Soon.
And you know what? It's going to be a slog.
It's
going to
be a tough.
It's that schedule's tough.
It is tough.
It's really tough. Now Jed talked about it, and he talked around it, and you never quite know in baseball. Baseball has such, cue the Bernstein reference here, variance.
It does have a lot.
Has a lot of variance, especially in April.
Unless you're making predictions for records with Brandon in the mix. There's no variance.
The Cubs, as Steve Greenberg points out this morning in his column in the Sun-Times, could start 16-16 and still feel pretty good about it, given who they played. All playoff teams. You know, from the Dodgers to opening up with the defending World Series champs.
Win tonight, okay? Let's go. Get it started.
Justin Steele gets things started. The ace on the mound for the Cubs. I like this matchup over the weekend. Three games against the Rangers. You've got Steele, you've got Hendricks, and then you've got Jordan Wicks, who I think is the sleeper on this staff that is going to have a very good season.
That's your breakout star.
That's my breakout guy.
Steal the opener.
I'm steeled for anything to happen.
God help us all. 312-644-6767. Frank is in Lakeview. Hey, Frank.
Yeah, hi. I want to talk a little bit about the history of Reinsdorf and his relationship to money. I don't think he's, I don't really believe he's cheap. I just think it's who he is. And it's a competition that's important to him more so than winning titles. If you guys remember, well, Molly probably remembers because he's, you know, very old. If you guys remember when Reinsdorf bought the club, you're welcome.
I do.
When Reinsdorf, yep. Oh, I see. When Reinsdorf bought the club, I don't remember if it was from Allen or Vecht, but when he bought the club, the owner wanted to sell it to DiPartola. And DiPartola was the guy all the fans wanted to buy it. And so the commissioner put out these two red herrings, and they were definitely red herrings. One was he's an out-of-town owner, and he had promised, you know, he was willing to sign anything that he wouldn't move the White Sox, something, by the way, Jerry never signed, as we found out. So, and then...
Can I tell you a story, yeah. Frank, real quick? I was at a Super Bowl one time, and I ran into Eddie DiBartolo, and I identified myself, and I told him I grew up a Sox fan, and I was really hoping that he would buy the White Sox. And his response to me was, well, we should have owned the White Sox, and there was a connection between the White Sox and the Bulls. So I know for a fact that we would have wound up owning the Bulls too. And let me tell you something. Maybe we could have convinced the McCaskies to swap football teams.
Oh, no.
That's what the guy said.
Oh, my.
And he laughed, and I had a laugh. But I think I might have written that. So I'm sorry. Go ahead.
All right,
you're making a point that I'm about to make, and that is the other red herring was that he was connected with gambling, which not only was that not really true, but we know because of what happened with the football team that you know nothing like that was you know on the table. So the real reason, and Kuhn admitted this, you know, he didn't admit that it was the real reason, but he put it out there. That the reason they didn't want DiPartola to own the team was because he had too much money and they were afraid of a competitive unbalance.
That's accurate.
Yep. Thanks,
Frank.
Appreciate the history lesson.
He was rejected. If you remember when he was with the Niners and running that team, they were giving like bonuses to people. They were paying for airfares. They got caught up like in a scandal where they were giving all this extra money, like sending like flowers to guys' wives. They were just like always pouring gifts on people, and that ended up being against NFL rules.
Yep.
It's one of the reasons that he got in trouble. But the gambling thing and the connections there were why he was ousted and his sister took over the Niners.
Yep.
Okay.
Trip down memory lane.
Yeah.
So this team, this season.
Yeah, let's get
okay,
back
let's
to
get
this.
Back in the present day here. We've got the Sox, 3 o'clock today. Garrett Crochet, how many innings does he go?
You're with
Bruce 4 2/3?
No, I told you. I think a very successful opener for him would be getting into the fourth inning. I would be more like 3 2/3 than 4 2/3.
You've bristled when I've asked a couple people this question, but if the Sox have the lead in the ninth inning, is Michael Kopech on the mound to save the game?
We should probably ask Chris Getz that question, but I mean, for me, like Michael Kopech, this is my viewpoint, and maybe I'm wrong. And I understand now that he's a bullpen guy, you're looking at him to throw fewer pitches, and he's throwing the heater, and he hit 103, whatever it may be. To me, he is a failed starter. Now, there are a lot of bullpen guys that are failed starters, but he's now in the bullpen, and to me, he's more bust than secret weapon. To me.
Until he proves otherwise, that's exactly the right way to look at it.
So I don't want him.
He has to have command. He needs control. He needs to be able to get guys out without walking them.
He could come in. He could load the bases with walks, maybe hit a guy.
And strike him out.
And then strike out the side.
You could do that.
Yeah. But do you want to live on that roller coaster?
I don't really, but I think with the Sox, they can afford that gamble because they're in a position. They're not going to they're going to blow their chance to win the division. What do they have to lose, really? 101 games? So they can take these chances.
That's a really interesting way of looking at it.
They can be more aggressive. They can take risks because how much worse could it get?
That happens usually later in seasons.
Yeah.
Their teams have already started to lose where you start throwing out. You start doing stuff. You see it. Like you'll do crazy stuff.
What if you're aggressive early and it works? Then all of a sudden you adopt an identity. Yeah.
Okay.
This is the way we're going to go at it. We're going to leave nothing. We're going to leave nothing on the field. We're going to take every risk.
Gambling
that there is.
Griff.
Yes, Gambling Griff. There you're Mr. Nickname now. All right, as far as the Cubs go.
I'd never call a guy Sut.
One more question about the Cubs before we break for Getsy. Or Chris Getz. Sorry.
God. I don't know if you're making fun of it or you're following it up.
I'm not following it up. I'm just having fun with the nicknames, the hockey nicknames. Yeah. Justin Steele goes, say, 5 tonight. If there's a high-leverage situation in the Cubs-Rangers game, do you think that Craig Counsell will go to Adbert Alzolay if it's in the 7th or 8th, if he considers that the biggest moment of the game?
I think he could go to a number of guys. I think that there are other options.
Neris is an option.
I think
Merriweather's an option.
I think Neris would probably be the guy that you'll see in a high leverage situation in the 7th as opposed to the 9th.
I'm very curious to see how that unfolds.
I think Neris, because of his experience, would be the guy that Craig Counsell would go to in that over Alzolay and maybe Merriweather.
Our guy, Tommy Hotovy, is still the pitching coach, but Craig Counsell is known for his bullpen management.
Yes, he is.
How do those two things mesh, and what will those decisions be like in-game, high-leverage situations?
You know, honestly, I think they'll be the right call. I don't know if
I think they will, too.
I think that you're talking about two guys that have a very good sense of what they're doing, and they could even go through that a little bit. You know, hey, let's get to Neris here. Well, why don't we go with so-and-so because he's faced him in this situation, and then we'll go, okay, let's do that.
Matchup-driven.
I think they will do that.
Metric-driven.
And supposedly
intelligence-driven.
We know that Counsell is a big metrics guy. He meets privately with the metrics people, is going out to dinner with them, et cetera. So, okay.
Finally, a manager they mesh with.
Yes. All right, we're going to talk to the architect of this White Sox team. We're going to talk to Chris Getz. We'll get a good sense. I'm very excited to talk to the guy that's putting this deal together on opening day and appreciate him jumping on. We'll talk to Chris Getz next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Now, turning our attention to the main order of business today, Chris Getz.
From this day forward, our organization will do whatever is necessary to be better in 2024 and beyond. Just like any leader of an organization, you're shaped by your experiences. And, you know, I'm a recent player, was an executive in another organization, and obviously I've got my experiences here. This is a storied franchise, rich in tradition. It's an honor to play for this team, an honor to be an executive of this organization as it enters into a new chapter. And I am ready to officially begin this next chapter.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Interesting to hear Chris Getz. We'll be talking to him in just a little bit. Kind of fun to hear him talk about becoming the architect of this team. I've been to enough of the Sox conventions and stuff to have heard him speak publicly.
Yep.
And I'm delighted that he's coming on our show.
Enthusiasm, energy, a lot of vision for what is next. And he took over under some difficult circumstances. But this is a new time. A new era begins today.
And now joining us on the Circa Sports Hotline is Chris Getz. Download the Circa Sports app today. Chris, good morning. Thank you for joining us. Great to talk to you.
Good morning, guys. Hope you guys are doing well. Exciting day for us. Opening day is here.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm wearing my Sox hat. I grew up a Sox fan. I was just saying I've seen you talk at the various conventions when that was going on and really have enjoyed a lot of what you've had to say about the game. I was fascinated to hear you say yesterday that you believe the team IQ is one of the accomplishments. You've gotten the IQ up, and and anybody that has watched your team as closely as we have over the years understands that positioning on defense, that running the bases, that some of the, even with the talent that the White Sox have shown, some of the actual baseball played, it would drive anybody nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly mentioned, you know, raising the baseball IQ of this team, and You know, anyone that has an appreciation and understanding of the game and you know, yeah, not being well positioned, making poor decisions, not throwing to the right bases, not understanding these situational events that pop up. I mean, there's a level of, you know, acquisition, who we're bringing in, and certainly a high baseball IQ is part of that process. But certainly on the development front, are we stressing the right things? Are expectations set? Are they at the right level? And then as you transition at the major league level, are you going to be consistent with that? So, yeah, that is something that we've focused on. There's different ways to go about it. You look at, you know, this roster and what they're capable of doing. Each roster has their stories. I think this one, you know, is a unique one with you're looking at players that are certain points of their career, and they've got a lot to prove and play for all in one kind of, as this team, you know, you look at this team and it's full of guys like that. So to really channel this in the right way and have our expectations from a IQ standpoint and going out there, making good decisions, hopefully, you know, we can rack up the wins along the way.
Great to talk to you again, Chris. So you made it quite a stir earlier in this offseason when you said you didn't like this team. And then you began the process of putting the roster together that we'll see today. And I think it was reflected in that there's 14 Sox players that will be making their debut with the organization today. So it has been quite a bit of turnover. So I ask you this, when you watch this group, when you watch this team, what will it take for you to like it? What will be the things that you'll be evaluating that will say, okay, I like that, and this is all going in the right direction?
Well, you know, when you talk about likability, I mean, there's a chemistry to every group, and, you know, are they pushing each other in a positive way? Is the environment healthy for players to walk in and be themselves and go out there and compete and show off the talent that they have? You know, that's beyond just, you know, the player roster, right? That comes with the staff, you know, the coaches, the manager, the front office. Are we creating a healthy environment for these guys to go out there and compete on a regular basis? And you know, we feel like we're in a pretty good spot. Time will tell, you know, when you're faced with adversity and how you're going to react. But, you know, oftentimes people talk about, you know, how do you react to adversity, but also the handling success. You've got players that all of a sudden, you know, can become a little bit more selfish, you know, along the way when they start, you know, accumulating success along the way. Is there humility? Is there continuous drive? All those types of things that go into the chemistry of a team. We have been very intentional on the types of players that we're bringing into this group. You know, obviously it takes a lot of talent to win at this level. And you know, we feel like we've got a group that is talented enough and driven in the right direction. So, you know, I look forward to getting it rolling today and seeing how it plays out throughout the year.
Chris, I'm very curious about your relationship with Pedro Grifol. You had a pre-existing relationship with him before he was hired. He talked about you as a player. We remember you as a player. I'm very curious as to how you guys are working together. What is the relationship like, and what is it that you expect from him? Where does he begin and you end? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I mean, Pedro and I have a very close working relationship. I mean, without question, I think, you know, I don't want to speak for him, but, you know, I believe that he can pick up the phone at any time and call me, text. We spend a lot of time together. You know, what we did in Arizona and then, you know, here in Chicago. And, you know, he understands, you know, certainly the direction that envisioned that I have for this organization. He's done a great job carrying that out so far in spring training. I feel like I need to be a supporter. I need to help him along the way, and I'm willing to do that. He's done a tremendous job, you know, with his coaching staff and with the players so far, establishing, you know, the style of play, the expectations, really driving in some deeper values throughout the organization. And, you know, so you know, it's a strong bond. We do have a longer history together than perhaps some other people in this organization. Yeah, we work well together. I always look forward to conversations, our deep dives, and you know, we're here to help each other.
So, Chris, when you look at the season, then in that context, when you talk about what the manager is going to do and what the general manager would like to see done, sometimes those can be in conflict between the conflict inevitably between the present and the future. When you have a decision like a catcher, for example, Max Stassi begins the season on the injured list. Corey Lee is up, and he's a young prospect who you feel very good about.
Had a great spring.
I just wonder, if this season is about developing talent for the future, wouldn't every decision be leaning toward the young prospect to see what he has? And you might face that inevitability later in the season with Colson Montgomery and what to do with him and another prospect like maybe Drew Thorpe and how to fit him into the rotation. Will the nod always go to the prospect in a year devoted to development?
Yeah, when we bring a player up, you know, we you know, you gotta, all right, what has he accomplished so far? You know, it could be in a minor league season. And, you know, does this need to, what are our needs at the major league level? Do we need to plug a player right into the rotation? Do they need to pick up the heavy load, whether it be catcher or another position? So there's a lot of factors going in to say that, like, you get to a point where you're just going to punt on trying to win games that night in lieu of development of the player. You know, at the major league level, that's not something that we really want to do. Now, if you feel like we can be well positioned to win a ball game and develop a player, that's the ideal position to be in. Corey Lee, you know, Maldonado's getting the start today. Corey Lee's going to get plenty of opportunity, but also just to work alongside someone like Maldonado, I think is going to certainly help a Corey Lee for his career. I mean, Maldi, you know, he's won a World Series, been to playoffs, long catching career. Just to see how he builds a rapport and plans for games, makes adjustments, all those types of things, how to navigate a major league season that can be really grueling, certainly in the catching position. To have that nearby, Corey Lee, I think, you know, has its benefits. But you're right. I mean, in regards to the best path to reaching someone's potential is to play. But certainly having Corey on this roster or someone else, Corey's going to play. He's going to have plenty of opportunity.
So we've been joking since we heard that Garrett Crochet was going to be the starter, that he was the opener day starter. And I know you've pushed back on that. I know he's pushed back on that. What are your expectations for him today, his first ever start on opening day? How long do you think he can go? Do you have any pitch limit in mind? How do you view Garrett Crochet, who had a great spring himself in his first start?
Yeah, I mean, he's going to be able to show us and tell us how deep he can go into a game. And it's about efficiency. We challenged him in spring. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we told him, listen, if you want to be a starter, you've got to have some innings that are, you know, 15 to 17 pitches or less. We can't rack up the 30-plus pitches every single inning. And he really took to that. I think it was his first outing. The first inning he threw in spring training, it was probably right at 15 pitches. The next one, it was the same thing. So it's really about efficiency. He's got electric stuff. Mm. You know, what we've seen in spring training kind of reminds us of back in 2020 when he, you know, made his debut, essentially from the alternate site where games kind of revolved around getting Garrett Crochet into the game. You just felt like it was such a competitive advantage of once Garrett Crochet was on the mound. So, you know, Garrett's had a really smooth spring training. He hasn't started at the major league level or professional baseball for that matter. But I, you know, when we came to this decision, I mean, I think it's really excited to make a statement, have Garrett with the stuff that he has, go out there today, compete, and we adjust from there.
How difficult was it to demote Michael Kopech? And we've talked about it this morning. I've asked a couple of different people. If the Sox have a one-run lead in the ninth inning today, do you expect him to get the baseball as part of this idea that he can be the closer?
You know, it's interesting. I never really felt like it was a demotion. Maybe Michael did. I don't want to speak for him. I looked at it as an opportunity to really, minimize his plate, like just simplify some things so he can go out there with his best stuff and not try to navigate, you know, 5, 6, 7 innings of a game and just go out there and you know, just get big outs 1 and 2 innings at a time. And he transitioned really well once we did that. I do know that there were probably was a level of disappointment, but I kind of viewed it as, gosh, you know, you look at our pitching staff and it's like, all right, well, you know, who's got the ability to get really, you know, really good hitters out at big moments of the game. And it's, you know, when you start racking these guys up and we've got a list of them, it's like, you know, Michael's kind of there. You know, you look at, you know, what he can do with a fastball and a slider. He was up 98 to 100. He was pounding the zone and just that wipeout slider. This looks pretty good. So, if the situation calls for it, I'll leave that to Pedro. Obviously, we'll plan this out and put ourselves in a good position to put the right arm into the moment. But, Michael's very capable.
Chris, expectations are modest, to put it lightly. I believe the win totals that are projected are closer to 61.5 from the fine folks in Vegas, from various sites that look at baseball. What does success look like to you? What is it that your team will do this year that you will say, yes, this is going the right way? It doesn't have to be a win total. I'm just curious as to how you will watch what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly want to establish a cleaner style of baseball. I do. I think, White Sox fans deserve that. They're looking for that. You certainly want to feel like we are moving in the right direction, building towards something special. You know, you look at some of these projections and these win totals. I mean, I understand. I get it. But also, if you really look, look behind the curtain a little bit, and you look at, Garrett Crochet. Okay, what does this look like as a starter? If it could play out this way, it could play out that way. You've got Mike Soroka. The outcomes are there could be really positive. And you look at Eric Seti that joins him coming from the KBO into the rotation here. Hit a tremendous season over there and to get the opportunity. You know, if things you look at that group in itself and you're like, all right, like. This could be really exciting. Obviously, it needs to play out a certain way. We've got some new faces in the bullpen and different roles. You got a Ben Attendee, you've got a Eloy Jimenez and a Yoan Moncada and a Louis Robert and an Andrew Vaughn. If we keep these guys healthy and posted on a regular basis and keep them truly engaged as a core group offensively, you know, that's a pretty good group right there. And then you look at our defense and how sound I feel like it's going to be up the middle, which is such a strong indication of what direction a team's going to go. There's some real pieces to like here and interesting stories. I think it'll be a fun opportunity to see how this plays out. There's plenty to like on this team. And I look forward to watching like everyone else to see what we're capable of doing as a group.
Chris, you were a grindy player, a smart player, and I imagine you're going to take the same approach to this job as a general manager. So in that vein, when you look at your analytics department, how would you describe your ambition for beefing that up? And how willing is Jerry Reinsdorf to make the resources available for you to do that if you believe that that's necessary to, you know, get closer to winning consistently?
Yeah, I mean, it's about leveraging, information to put yourself in a position to make – a good decision and win the decision. It's built into how we put together a lineup, how we use our starters or relievers. It's built in the acquisition process. It's a focal point. Do we boast about it? Do we feel the need to talk about it? Not really. It's just built into to every process that we pretty much have. You hear about the amount of, analysts that this team has and this team has. You know, it's not a race to who has the most analysts. It's about, making smart decisions, and there's different ways to go about it. It's just built into what we do. And we value it tremendously. I mean, I it's part of most conversations, but it's not, you know, put out on an island and this is what they're doing for us or this is what they're doing for us. You know, it's part of the White Sox. This is how we conduct our business, and we try to make good decisions just like everyone else.
Hey, thanks a ton for coming on, Chris. We really appreciate it. We wish you the best of luck today and for the entire season.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, thanks, guys. Have a great one.
You too.
You too. That is Chris Getz. Good for him. That's fun stuff. You know, people are texting and there isn't things to be excited about with the what. There are things to be excited about. There are. You know, Luis Robert is worth the price of going to a game. He's a great player.
The scars of the 101 loss season are obvious, and and certainly the post La Russa trauma is recognized and still evident. But
and we're not deluding ourselves into believing that things are going to be all seashells.
At some point,
and
you need to move on.
But here's the reality: they're going to play a season. At some point, we'll have a second opening day. It'll be when Colson Montgomery shows up, right?
All right.
I think
promise,
there are,
because I think that's a big one.
I hope so.
That's a big one. And I think I liked what he had to say about Corey Lee. He's going to play. If he produces, he's going to play.
Good. And you know who needs a big season is Andrew Vaughn. He's right about that.
I think he does.
Benintendi, earn your money, sir.
Earn your money, and Andrew Vaughn, justify your draft position because he was a high pick. It's time now.
All right. We are going to head out to Wings and Rings, and we're going to find ourselves some colleagues. Right now, Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes, Layla Rahimi, they're doing their show live today, 10 to 2 at Wings and Rings on Halstead. And you can join The Score and Modelo at Wings and Rings as they get ready for this afternoon season opener. Can't wait to talk to them.
And tonight, the Cubs season, of course, begins on the road against the Rangers. Pregame coverage right here, 6 o'clock, first pitch, 6:35. It's the only local broadcast of tonight's game on 670 The Score and on the Odyssey app in Chicagoland.
And if you missed any of our conversations, we talked to Jed Hoyer. We just talked to Chris Getz. Anything you missed from earlier in the show, you can use the rewind feature to go back and listen. Just download that Odyssey app. Search 670 The Score, tap earlier today, and you will be hooked up. Dan, Lawrence, and Layla next. Mully and Haw on The Score.